Well, you know what I think. I'm a Christian. I'm not going to deny that.
I do want everyone to feel comfortable. That's why I'd like to talk to you about Jesus.
Please do not go religious.
Somebody's going to hell over there.
He better not.
Even the devil will speak the truth for his own purposes.
This is war.
Accept it.
Back to Jerusalem podcast.
Yeah, I'm back and I'm armed with righteousness.
With your host, Eugene Bach.
He just seems like he's got it all figured out.
He's a righteous dude.
Yep.
Hello and welcome to another Back to Jerusalem podcast. I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, and I'm coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of China this time. And I want to do a special podcast because this is something that people have asked me a little bit about. I've seen it in the news, and I've seen basically what is taking place is the mainstream media gaslighting people that have questions about these 15-minute cities. Now, if you haven't heard of the 15-minute cities, they're actually a pretty good idea. I'm kind of a big fan of them. I'm actually in a place in China right now that is relatively the same as the proposal for a 15-minute city. I'm a big fan of the 15-minute cities because the older I get, the lazier I get. And personally, for myself, I haven't owned a car for over 20-some-odd years. And I've kind of gotten used to when I'm not living where I would like to be, which is one of my favorite places on earth. Completely remote, away from all people, completely away from all civilization. That is not the place, unfortunately, that God has called me to be. He's called me to be in the very smack dab in the middle of the place where I'm not the most comfortable, which is in the middle of some of the biggest metropolitan cities in the world. And when you're in the middle of those cities, driving is a nightmare, whether you live in New York City or London or Shanghai. Owning a car can be an absolute nightmare. And for people like me, you start to contemplate homicide on an hourly basis when you're forced to drive in traffic. And so the idea of living in a place where you don't need a car, like where I'm at now, I'm actually in the middle of a metropolitan area where I'm in a high-rise building. I actually live on the 15th floor of the building that we reside in. And so it's very easy for me just to go downstairs, walk outside, and I can walk almost anywhere. I can walk about 10 minutes to the school where my children attended. I can walk for about 15 to 20 minutes and be at the post office, the bank, different restaurants. I can walk about 5 minutes and be at a location where I can have a 7-Eleven, grocery store, and other restaurants, as well as our church. So I like the idea of a 15-minute city. If you're not familiar with this 15-minute city, it's basically an idea that was proposed by a Parisian urban architect by the name of Carlos. His last name escapes me at the moment, but he was a professor in Paris that came up with this idea that everybody should have everything that they need within a 15-minute walk or bike ride. That you can go to the dentist, the doctor, restaurants, the grocery store, the bank, your office, the children's school. All of these different places should be available or accessible within a 15-minute walk or in some cases a bike ride. And so many cities have really liked this idea. And there are many urbanites that have also gravitated towards this idea because of its convenience. And if it's about convenience, like it is for me, then it's a great idea. What is taking place, though, and what many people complain about with the 15-minute cities, and what many people are a little anxious over, is the fact that the 15-minute city is being proposed in many different meetings as an answer to climate change. And those that are advocates of doing everything that we can as a human race to lower our carbon footprint, as it were, are proposing these 15-minute cities as an answer. Now, when this is introduced, it's no longer a market decision, but a centralized planning committee decision. And the 15-minute city has already been done. And so there are people around the world that are very cautious, as they should be, when they hear environmentalists wanting to deploy the idea of a 15-minute city in every major city around the world. And there should be concern. And let me tell you why. Because of one simple fact. We've already seen the 15-minute city deployed, used, and spectacularly fail in China. What I meant at the beginning of this podcast when I was talking about gaslighting by the mainstream media is that when individuals say that they are cautious or suspicious of the 15-minute city idea because it seems like socialist government overreach coming into the lives of everyday working citizens and trying to take control over their lives and make them do things that they don't want to do. There are arguments, and you can find these online. Just go and do a Google search. Don't do a DuckDuckGo search because you'll find different results. But if you specifically do a Google search on 15-minute cities, one of the things that you'll find on the first page of results is two findings. First is a very rational, glowing introduction to the 15-minute city. Secondly, you will find conspiracy theories on the 15-minute city where anybody that disagrees with 15-minute cities are jokes and tin hat conspiracy theorists. And they make these individuals look like idiots by saying that, you know, well, people that disagree with 15-minute cities are saying that, you know, the government will take away your car and will not allow you to travel outside of your planned zone. This is not the Maze Runner. This is not a situation where the government will take away your freedom of travel. How ridiculous. They're gaslighting you. Because if it is a desire of individuals in the marketplace, the market will provide for those that want to pay for it. And if people do not want to do it, that's where central planning committees come into place to give people things that are good for them that they simply do not recognize themselves. And the reason I say that is because we can already learn the lesson of the 15-minute cities from history in China. You don't have to do it. You don't have to plan for it. It's already done. And not just in China. We've seen the 15-minute cities deployed in North Korea, in Cuba, in Ethiopia, Cambodia, Vietnam. There have been several cities and nations across time and around the world, in different cultures, in different nations, in different legal settings that have shown that 15-minute cities, when forced on individuals that simply do not want them, do not work. Not only do they not work, they are deadly disastrous. There is a university paper that comes out of China that I would highly recommend that any of our listeners listen to, or read, rather. It is a university paper done by a student by the name of Sun Sheng Han that was working on his BA out of Tongji University in 1983. And he was doing his master's dissertation at the Asian Institute of Technology in 1987, when he wrote a paper called Controlled Urbanization in China. What he did is write a detailed paper, one of the few detailed research papers about controlled urbanization as it was deployed in China from 1949 to 1989. And what we see during these 40 years of history inside of China is a detailed list of the genesis and the results of the 15-minute city. Now, it wasn't called the 15-minute city in Russia. It wasn't called the 15-minute city in China. And it's not called the 15-minute city today in North Korea. Instead, during that time, it went under a different name. See, this is one of the geniuses of communism and modern-day socialism, is that when you have old concepts, you can basically regurgitate them with new names, and repackage them, and sell old ideas to a new generation and make them think that they are being creative, thinking outside the box, progressive, if they adopt these new ideas. New ideas that are maybe a little bit too foreign to old people that still live in the old times, in the dark ages. But when you are enlightened, a modern thinker, then you can come up with these new ideas. But they're not new ideas. 15-minute city, they're trying to tell you that it was just kind of invented by a professor in Paris in 2016. But that's not true. This is not new. These are old, regurgitated communist ideas that come directly out of the handbook of Marxism. And you can see it laid out in a paper from 1983. If you just go on to Google and you do a search called Controlled Urbanization in China by Sun Sheng Han, you will find a PDF of his dissertation, an absolute amazing detailed study of China's planned urbanization in China during the time of Mao Zedong and Deng Xiaoping. What you will find is a basic, direct blueprint of the 15-minute city, proving that it's not a new idea. It's old, tired communism that's been proven wrong. What we see with the controlled urbanization of China is pretty simple. It was the same thing where the Chinese believed that everything needed to be accessible. Different reasons, same result. You see, controlled urbanization is a socialist method deployed by the Chinese for urban planning, much like the 15-minute city. The problem is that unless the idea is market-driven, so in my case, it's market-driven. I'm a consumer. I wanted everything to be in a convenient 15-minute walk. Therefore, I looked for convenience. It works for me. But when it's not market-driven and instead implemented by a top-down approach, then the concepts have to be superimposed, usually by a central agency, for reasons that are absolutely not economical, but ideological. You see, in 1949, when the Communist Party in China first came to power, they created what was called the National Development Projects, and they implemented projects, or policies rather, according to objectives that were not economical, but ideological. Ideological according to the Communist Party. Controlled urbanization has its ideological roots, not in economy, but in Marxism. And the idea was to create both convenience and efficiency for the common worker, right? That sounds like a great goal. 15-minute city so that families and children, workers can have easy access to the grocery store, to their schools, to the community that they live in without having to drive 100,000 miles every single day in order to go to the places that they most want to go to. It sounds like a noble cause and it sounds like a great idea. It's easy to buy into for good reason. I bought into it. But the primary flaw with the 15-minute cities as well as controlled urbanization is that the policies have to be developed out of what people want, not ideology. That is the foundational problem with the idea. Controlled urbanization is more of an accurate term, I believe, of the 15-minute cities because it is and has to be, by its very nature, controlled. 15-minute cities are great if they are demanded by the market. But when socialists believe that they know better than the consumer, then control measures are imposed. And that means forcing people to adapt. Whenever you have to force people to do something that they don't want to do, that means it's not good for them. People are not so stupid as to know what's not good for them. There's so many people, especially in the socialist communist construct, that says that, no, we know what's best for you. You shut up and do what we say because this is good for you. China's controlled urbanization is derived from the foundational teachings according to Marxism, where capitalism should be replaced by communism. That's the genesis. In communist China, the means of production and planning were collectively dictated by a central committee. And communities, the communities of people where they lived, were organized by the Central Planning Committee, and they were done with these careful little blueprints and plans. These careful plans were put together by ideologists with a focus to satisfy the demand of the people without ever, you know, doing oversupply. And this was accomplished by how? By doing the idea of equal distribution of access. Access to what? Equal distribution of access to work and stores and goods and services in each community. Guys, all of this is good. All of this appeals to the good nature of human beings. In the 15-minute cities, the goal is the same. It's ideological. For the communists, the ideological goal was to accommodate the worker. It's a good goal. For the 15-minute cities, the goal is also ideological, but the ideology is the environment. The communists believed that the world was being destroyed by the market economy and the people needed to rise up and take control away from the greedy capitalists. Whereas the environmentalists believe that the world is being destroyed by climate change and the people need to rise up and take control away from the greedy capitalist. Different reasons, but still the same desire for centralized control to do what is good for the people. Tyrants never take control for their own selfish desires. It's always proposed as to be good for the people. In the 1950s, China, and not as many people supported the controlled urbanization as was thought. The reason given was not because independent thinkers have different opinions, but the reason why they thought so many people opposed controlled urbanization was because people had been brainwashed by capitalists. See, that's what happens when a good idea by these kind of ideologues is proposed. If people don't accept it, well, it's not because it's not a good idea. It's not because an independent thinker might think differently than me. It's because they don't agree with me because they are brainwashed. So in order to make people understand the need for things like controlled urbanization, people were sent away to be re-educated. To be re-educated the correct way. When they still did not adapt to China's controlled urbanization, the Communist Party implemented an ID law. Guys, I saw this when I moved to China for the very first time. You know, a lot of people may not know this, but in the 1990s and the early 2000s, when I first started traveling into China, individuals couldn't just travel where they wanted, when they wanted, how they wanted to. You had to show an ID card wherever you traveled to. And you had to show that you had the right to travel into certain areas. You were restricted to stay and live and not travel outside of the area where you were connected or where your ID card said that you were supposed to be. You see, anybody that had traveled into, let's say, Shenzhen, for instance, in the late 1990s or the early 2000s, they would have seen, without a doubt, especially if you would have driven a taxi or a transport vehicle from Guangzhou to Shenzhen or from Shenzhen to Guangzhou, if you'd have been on the road during that time, you would have seen these massive checkpoints to make sure that you were not, that you did not enter into special economic zones where you were not allowed. You see, every individual was issued an ID card. And on that ID card, it said your name, as well as your profession and the location where you were allowed to reside. It wasn't just, like, for instance, right now I have a driver's license from California. I have three driver's licenses. I have one from China, one from Hong Kong, one from the U.S. And the one that I have from the U.S. is from California. So that license has my address, and it's issued from the state with the authority that authorizes me to drive. And so what that does is basically identify me as an individual, but it does not restrict me as an individual. When I travel from state to state in the United States, they do not check my ID card at the border of each state saying that, well, no, your residency is in Thousand Oaks, California. Therefore, you are not allowed to travel into Phoenix, Arizona. Or you're not allowed to drive across the border into Reno, Nevada. No, that is just to identify me as an individual, my tax-paying status, as well as the authority that issued me my driving privileges. In China, that was not the case. You see, if I drove from Guangzhou to Shenzhen as a Chinese citizen in the early 2000s, those checkpoints would check my ID card. And if my ID card said that I was from Guilin in Guangxi province and my job was a forester, they would know right away at the checkpoint that I would not be allowed to travel into Shenzhen, a special economic zone reserved for people that were a part of trade, consultancy, production. That's still the case today. The checkpoints are a lot more relaxed. But one of the reasons why so many parents leave their children in their hometown of a place like Guangxi or Qinghai or Xinjiang to go and work in places like Shanghai or Wenzhou, Shenzhen, or Guangzhou is because their ID card identifies where they're allowed to live, which means that they cannot, by their own desire, up and move to Shenzhen for economic opportunities and bring their children with them because their children will not be allowed to attend school in their area. They will not be allowed to start a bank account in their area. They will not be allowed to rent in their area where they are working if they move to Shenzhen. So they have to do their banking. Their children have to go to school. They have to register with the local authorities where they're from. This is controlled urbanization. Why? Because the people wanted to go where the people wanted to go. And the system doesn't work when people do what they want. When people have freedom to make their own decisions, then enforced 15-minute cities do not work. Controlled urbanization does not work. It does in the theory of a classroom. It does in the mind of a professor when they draw it up on a chalkboard, when they write out their dissertation, when they tell people what's good for them. Everything seems to work just fine. But when it doesn't work in the real world because people want real choices, then the flaw is not with the program or the ideology. The flaw is often perceived to be with the people not getting with the program. Why? Because they have been brainwashed by capitalists. Therefore, they need to be re-educated, as it happened in communism, in re-education camps or labor camps, to deconstruct the teaching of the capitalist controllers, or to take away the brainwashing from the propaganda that had been heaped upon the people for years and years. Therefore, the people just needed to understand what was good for them by understanding better communism. The thought never occurs to those that are in power, that are a part of the central planning committees, that have created these 15-minute cities, that have grand ideas for how everybody will be happy. The thought never occurs to them that maybe they are the ones that have bought into bad ideology. The thought never occurs to them that maybe they were the ones that were wrong, until they are the ones that are subjected to the very things that they plan. You notice that in communism and socialism, those that propose what's good for the people never abide by the rules that they employ that is good for the people. No. They're special. They operate outside of that creation that they have dreamed up because they are elite. They are the planner. They deserve certain privileges. Your children need to go to the school that is within the 15-minute walk of where you live. My children go to the school that is best for them in their future. Your job needs to be located within the 15-minute walk of where you live. My job is wherever the best opportunities are for me, because I'm important. I'm different. I'm special. This happens every time whenever you have central planning committees. It's important to remember that innocent cities in China did not ever expect that they would ever not be able to travel outside of their zones. One of the big arguments with people from the 15-minute cities is to say that nobody's going to take away your car. No one's going to restrict you from travel. That's just ridiculous. That is the uneducated, tin hat-wearing conspiracy theorists. The idea is always sold and packaged by explaining how well it will work. And when it doesn't work as promised, it's blamed on those that think they don't need to play by the rules. And when individuals don't play by the rules, and they show that the system doesn't work, well then, greater restrictions are imposed on people with the hopes that the greater restrictions will force people to abide by the rules, and then the plan will work. China doesn't provide the only example. This is a very good example. You can find it online, like I said, by looking up the dissertation done by Sun Sheng Han. Published, this paper was published in 1987, and it's called Controlled Urbanization of China from 1949 to 1989. A great read. I read through the paper last night. But there are many other countries that show what happens when governments impose the 15-minute city, or as it was called in China, controlled urbanization. North Korea is one of the best examples. North Koreans can't simply pack up and move to whatever city they feel like. They can actually be executed if they are found to be living in certain parts of the country that they're not allowed to, like Rajin, for instance. Individuals cannot freely travel between communities without approval from the central government. Advocates for the 15-minute city will often gaslight their opponents, pointing out that it's absurd to think that there will be this locking of down or dividing of entire cities. I mean, are you kidding me? Do you think that we are actually going to divide up and lock down the entire city of a place like New York or London into 15-minute city parcels that people can't live unless they're given leave, unless they're given permission? Admittedly, the idea would seem to be absurd and maybe even laughable until 2020. You see, after the pandemic, the idea of governments locking up people and restricting their travel, restricting the travel of entire populations, is no longer absurd. Yes, but that was different, you say to yourself. Those, Eugene, those were extreme circumstances where millions of people could die. That's why those travel restrictions were in place. If that is your stance, then perhaps it would be good to ask if those advocating the 15-minute cities to create sustainability that believe in climate change, would they say that climate change is less or more dangerous than the threat of COVID-19? You see, those that are pushing the agenda of climate change today, right now, it's not just an ideology, it's a religion. I'm a big supporter of a clean environment. I love nature, recycling, and being good stewards of the world around us. I'm a conservationist by nature. I love nature. But environmentalism is something completely different. It goes beyond just an ideology. It is a religion. And proponents of it, believers in it, the faithful clergy of the religion of environmentalism, believe that climate change is going to destroy the world and will bring about much more death than COVID-19. Beware of their desire to help. Few things are more scary than the individual that wants to force good things upon you for your own good. So that is my take on the 15-minute cities that I just wanted to share together with you. You may not even have heard of them, but if you have, this is something to keep in mind. I'm not trying to change your mind on the 15-minute city. I'm not trying to persuade you one way or the other, but I do want to give you a little example from China of which we are a little familiar with because we've already seen some of the exact same blueprints of the 15-minute city done in China. And I believe that we can learn from that history. I want to thank you so much for joining us for another Back to Jerusalem podcast. Again, I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of China. God bless you.